You're recording.
All right, thank you. We are going to advance real quick to section four, number four. Maricopa County Superior Court Case LC 2022-00062-001. Our board case number is 2184, Lorna Lattman, DBO. So I'll turn this over to you, Chris.
Sure. Got the right members of the board, and perhaps we can have Mr. Campbell join us at the table if you'd like.
Oh, and we probably should say for record, Ms. Frost is no longer here.
And Mr. Campbell is appearing on behalf of his client, Dr. Lehman, in this matter. And first and foremost, before I kind of get into how we got here this afternoon, I want to give a special thanks to Victoria because Reed did not receive confirmation from his client until Monday afternoon that we had reached a tentative agreement that we could present it to you. I immediately contacted Victoria, and she, in the midst of everything else she was doing, was able to get it on the agenda so that we could present it to you this afternoon. So we really appreciate everything that Victoria did to get us to this moment. I hope everybody's had a chance to review the materials that Victoria provided, and mainly it's that first attachment or document, which is the appeal that Dr. Lehman filed. And in doing so, Reed pretty much attached everything to it. But just quickly, by background, you issued an order in October of last year to Dr. Lehman. And in essence, and if, you know what, it might be helpful. I have copies of the original board order and the proposed consent agreement. And it might be helpful if you just had that rather than the screen. And Reed, here's an extra copy. Thank you, Mark. I don't want to, you know, not substantially review the findings of facts or the conclusions of law. But in essence, you ordered continuing education. It was 4 hours in the area of neurology, IBDD. And then you also ordered her to retake an examination. And that specific examination is on page 5 of the original order, and it was it's called the International Council for Veterinary Assessment. She didn't like the board's order. She filed a timely motion for rehearing or review. You considered that at your February meeting. You denied it, and then in March, Dr. Lehman pursued her administrative remedies and sought relief in Superior Court. Once we received notification of the appeal, I reached out to Reed and we discussed, you know, kind of what her position is, what's really kind of upsetting her about this case, and is there any, you know, opportunity to resolve it before we start rolling up our sleeves and getting going, knowing that the order was originally issued in October of last year. Typically, a JRA will not get resolved for, you know, an additional 9 to 12 months. So we had a number of conversations, in fact, the original conversations regarding what would be acceptable started with Mr. Stoll and then transferred to Mr. Reed. And there was some back and forth. And finally, we got to the place that we would consider deleting or eliminating the requirement for the examination, but keeping the findings of facts and conclusions of law as is and everything else in place. That was presented to Dr. Lehman, and I'll, you know, Reed can, you know, share with you what he would like with respect to that about a week ago. And then, like I said, I believe it was Monday afternoon, I got the notification from Reed that Dr. Lehman would accept those terms. We quickly prepared the document that is the first document, which is the consent agreement for your review and hopeful approval. As I mentioned, it's identical to the board order with the exception that it doesn't contain the requirement for that examination. Of course, contingent on all this is Dr. Lehman's agreement to dismiss the judicial review action with prejudice. Yesterday, Reed sent me the notice of settlement that he has filed with the court, which is the precursor to filing the order for dismissal with prejudice. It's my understanding that that will be promptly done if the board accepts the consent agreement this afternoon. If you have any questions or if you'd like legal advice, I'd be more than happy to go into executive session with you. But you may also want to hear from Mr. Campbell to see if he has any remarks that he'd like to share with you.
Mark, could I just jump in just to clarify something for the board about which test it was?
Yes.
So ICBA gives the NAPLE. That's not what we were talking about. It's the ICBA's small animal companion animal species specific exam.
Okay,
so she's never taken that exam before. So that's the difference between that and the NAPLE.
And what was the concern with
exactly
taking
that
it?
Was going to be my question.
I mean, outside of the fact that no one really likes tests.
Right.
That's more to...
Yeah, she didn't feel that the examination was warranted under the findings of fact, that the CLE, the directed CLE towards the IVPD, was directly addressing the area that the board was expressed concerns about and what a violation was ultimately found. So one, that it was redundant. And two, she was also concerned with what would be the follow-up based on where she scored on that test. The order was silent on that, so what would happen if she had a bad testing day? So just all the ambiguities with that and the fact that, as I said, that the CLE addressed the area that you expressed concern with, that she felt it was redundant. She had some additional concerns and is willing to let those go to resolve this now. She had some concerns with some of the findings of fact. She didn't feel they were supported based on the testimony she provided. But again, in an effort to avoid the cost and expense and uncertainty of litigating it, she was willing to accept the parameters as outlined by Mark. The CLE, the fine, and the year of probation to complete the CLE.
And to my knowledge, we've never done this test before, have we?
Not yeah, we have. I won't say names, but yeah.
Yes.
But okay, so how did we interpret it then? Because I don't think I was around for that.
Yeah,
I believe there was language in that particular order or consent agreement that said that you didn't. I don't remember if it was passing or for a certain score, but there was something specific in that particular order.
I mean, it does get kind of weird. Since I've been on the board, I don't think we've required that anyone take that test. I don't know how you would. I'm not familiar enough with the test to even know how it scores.
Well, I mean, I think it's a good option for the test, and I mean, practically, I would probably say no to that request, but I think the fact that we didn't include something that says, what do we do with the results, I can see some argument there.
And remind me again, does anyone recall why exactly? Because, like, we've had other cases similar to this where you do direct the continuing education to be specific to the topic that needs more focus, right? But why did we, concerned about other things?
Yeah.
The board's conversation at the time was that they listened to her very lengthy disciplinary history and believed that there was gonna be limited value in more CE and was looking for some other way to put a pin in what was happening there. that's how I remember the conversation.
Yeah, that addresses the redundancy.
Yeah.
When we listen to the prior, I wasn't there, sorry. The priors were listened to, and then the decision was made to do the examination.
And there was some concern about diagnostic tests
that were
performed.
I remember that.
And were they appropriate for diagnosing things? And that's kind of where a whole, okay, well, where is this thought process coming in, and what's going on around this whole thing? Does that cause a problem with general knowledge in veterinary and small animal medicine because of the way the tests were carried out? I don't know. Yeah, I guess I could talk about it. I don't know what was done.
That was part of it too.
Yeah, because it was that muscle tension test.
The board at that time had a reason to order this test. They thought it was necessary.
Well, they said part of it was the muscle tension test of determining if we were allergic to certain
things. Yeah,
yeah. So,
yeah, history,
so
yeah.
It's like, what is the application process of that?
Sure.
And that's part of it, because it's like, where is that coming in actual scientifically?
Yeah.
So do we have the underlying basis to do that?
The thought process was, there are a lot of reasons we need to look at this particular respondent.
Yeah, but
based on priors, based on this case, and so if the reason was to try to assess competency, how are we going to do that if we don't have a means that the board thought was to assess the competency?
Yeah, but again, what are we going to do with those results? And I don't know if that's maybe that's my sticking point. It's not fair to be like, oh, here's a test, and once we get the results, then we'll tell you what we're going to do with them.
70's good, 60.
Yeah, so I think that's
a lot of veterinarians out there that I go, we should probably test this.
I mean, would you all pass your test again?
Oh, yeah. I know, that's why I say we have the option of taking NAVLE. It's like, that's a little scary test.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that there's no information on what we're doing with it, I think that's just kind of our
it's
issue.
A problem.
If we had everything in there, I'd be stronger of holding the line, but that I'm kind of like, that's a little arbitrary, unfortunately, and that's our fault. I think it's still an appropriate
test. Duly noted
for next time.
She might be happy if we say, all you have to do is take it. You don't have to.
Just for fun.
Yeah.
That's something that, because we're venturing in a new way, we didn't explain that well enough, and we didn't have a plan after the fact. I think we probably just assumed, hopefully, she would pass and learn something from
it.
But I think in the future, if we're going to look in that realm, we need to
define that.
Yeah, define passing and not passing, or at least what are the issues afterwards, or is this just a test that we're doing? But I think that leaving it open-ended right now, I can see where this argument is personally.
But it may be appropriate with those additions in the future should you come back before us.
Can we get information from them on, like, generally how many people take it a year, how far out on practice are they, how many pass, pass versus like, what's their
score?
I mean, I'm just kind of wondering, like, I don't know, if you've been out 10 years and you go and take this test, are you still likely going to pass it? I don't know the level of difficulty of it. And
right.
Or current.
Yeah, you have the option to take them if you really want to.
And is it remembering like
you
things
it, Victoria?
That, as a veterinarian, you would go and look up and you know, because if you asked me like the normal reference range on something, I'd probably be like, I don't know, I'd look it up if I needed to know it. But if that
is not that specific.
Well,
it's more general.
Could we look at it? I was kind of making light of that, but could that have some value? Yes, you need to take this. No, we're not going to say what the pass is, and maybe there's some value to that, and that would remove the fear. I'm not going to pass this.
I think there's
but
a possibility for the future.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, I think the cards are already down.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think we really can't do much here. But I think in the future we can probably get some kind of boilerplate thing going with that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, at the end of the day, sometimes these end up in compromises.
That's why we have lawyers.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. If it's not exactly what we want, then.
Yep.
That's the thing about elite law. Nobody
should
be happy, right?
Right.
So. I think we just have to make a motion to accept this then, or what would we do here?
You could make a motion to accept the consent agreement subject to Dr. Lehman dismissing with prejudice the appeal.
Okay.
I say so moved.
Yeah. We've got three of us, so.
All right, so we got that, and we got a second then?
Yes.
Okay, so we got a so moved and a second. Any other discussion? And we'll do a roll call vote on this then, please. I sprung it on you.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost is gone. Dr. James?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Motion passes.
All right, so the motion passes, so we will accept this pending the file for dismissal with prejudice.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, all right. For warrant is for.
So now are we gonna finish the IARs?
Yeah, so I think we should get through those. Yeah. Okay, so we'll go to 2265.
62, have we done 62?
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, 2262, I'm sorry, Abby Reed had. If we can get the, read that, I apologize. Front load on 2262.
So our case 2262. The complainant is J.D. Helmut. The respondent is Abby Reedhead, DVM. On April 6, 2021, lady and approximately 4-year-old female German Shepherd was presented to respondent for a stay procedure. Due to the dog's history of vomiting, respondent recommended postponing the procedure until they could resolve the dog's vomiting. Complainant suspected a food allergy. On April 19, 2021, food allergy testing was performed and adjustments were made to the dog's diet. The dog's condition did not improve. Respondent suspected the dog was regurgitating, not vomiting. On May 4th, 2021, radiographs were performed and revealed the dog had megaesophagus. Respondent consulted with complainant regarding treatment options and the prognosis of megaesophagus. According to complainant, respondent recommended humane euthanasia and offered no solution on treating the dog's condition. Respondent denies this allegation. On June 19, 2021, the dog was presented to Alta Sierra Veterinary Hospital for further diagnostics and treatments. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you very much. And we have no complainant, no respondent, and no counsel. So we will turn this over to Dr. Thompson.
All right, so in reviewing the information that we had in the investigative committee, this essentially just sounds, again, like one of those he said, she said types of situations, but in looking at all the information, it appears as though the respondent had given information on the condition, had given some options. There may have been some misinterpretation on the client's part, but I really don't see that there was an error in treatment or anything that caused a problem with this pet, and I would go with the investigative committee's recommendation of no violation.
Second.
All right, so we have a motion to dismiss with no violation and a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, the motion passes to dismiss with no violation for 2262. I'll do 2265. Lai Ting Torres, DVM, and if you can read the front load on that one, please.
Yes, and for the record, Dr. Thompson is recused.
Oh, thank you, yes, Dr. Thompson's recused.
Case 2265, the complainant is Francis Nunez, the respondent is Lai Ting Torres, DVM. On October 29, 2021, Zuli, a 6-month-old female domestic short-haired cat was presented to respondent for a spay procedure. The cat was examined, and based on the findings, respondent directed staff to contact complainant to let her know that the cat likely had an underlying viral condition. Complainant still wanted to proceed with surgery. Surgery was performed and the cat was discharged later that day. On November 17, 2021, complainant reported that the cat had passed away. And the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, so on this one, again, 2265, we have no complaint, no respondent, and Mr. Stoll is monitoring.
Yes, sir.
All right. So, Dr. Nosley, you're the lead on this one.
Okay. In this case of this young cat spay, reading through the, what was done at the clinic and the progress of this case, I think the doctor at the time made a judgment call whether the cat was healthy enough to undergo the procedure, and apparently she was. She's survived it just fine until discharge. There was quite a period of time after that before the cat passed away, so I don't know how we could say that there was any violations there by the respondent in this case. Like I said, it was about 3 weeks later, and we didn't have any follow-up diagnostics or treatments or anything, so we don't really know why. The question of whether surgery should have been done, I think, is answered. The cat did fine. I did, in reading through it, though, have some issues on medical records, in reading through the clinic's medical records. In two separate places, the vital signs are left blank. We don't have a TPR. We didn't have a TPR. At the top of their form, they list specifically, and then under the objective vitals, and there's nothing there either. So the first time the animal's temperature was taken is when the procedure started. The other thing in reading through this, and there was some delay in getting the records to the complainant, and they finally did, so we have records from that the complainant submitted from the hospital. Then we also have records directly from the hospital. And there's some pretty stark differences. All through the narratives is this is a 6-month-old cat. But in one of the copies of the records, it's listed as 1 year, 2 months, and 3 weeks. And in another one, it's listed as 1 year, 4 months, and 2 days. So I was very perplexed by this. And these are supposed to be the medical records. There's not supposed to be two sets. And I wonder why that is the case. So with the lack, and it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's right in our statutes that say the TPR needs to be recorded. I believe that's in the statutes.
There's a couple different options. So there's ARS 32, 22, 32, 21, failure to maintain adequate records as it relates to AAC R311, 502L4, which is results of examination, including temperature, heart rate, respiratory rate, general condition of the animal. So there's that one. Mm-hmm. Or you have ARS 32, 22, 33, B3, which is a minor records violation that are routine entries into a medical record and that do not affect the diagnosis or care of the animal. So
the outcome?
Yeah, it does not affect the diagnosis or care.
Okay.
So that's kind of more one of those, yeah, you see an issue, something's missing, or there's some discrepancy, there is a violation there, but it doesn't change. That's not the reason the animal died. Yeah.
And then I'd like to know what the board members think about this discrepancy in the two medical records.
I was just looking at them now. Is that based on print date? Like,
if you look at an easy way to look at it, just look at the rabies certificate or look at the spay certificate.
So the rabies,
everything is exactly the same except for the age of the animal, which was incorrect. The age of the animal was 6 months.
But
yeah, the very first.
So the first one was printed October 27th. That was the spay certificate, I think. 1 year, 4 months, and 2 days. The rabies certificate, which was February 1st of 22, says 1 year, 4 months.
So the computer just has the time it was printed.
Well, because when you
recalculated the,
that's what I would have thought, but that's not making sense either.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
This is in February. So it's putting the birth date at September 30th of 2020, but then if you look at the There's no way on October 27th of 2021, the cat could have been 1 year, 4 months, and 2 days. And on February 1st, 2022, the cat was 1 year, 4 months.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of wish I could not age, but.
Yeah, there's a date on the very bottom of the space to be at February 1st, 2022.
Yeah, and I was looking at that. That's why I was going off of that
so,
date.
Yeah.
But that's not
that's
saying it's only 2 days older.
Yeah. Begin with that fall into the. Let's see. These are always the cases where I like to see what the client filled out on their intake paperwork. Is that on here? I don't think that is. Is it here? Is it? There's any intake paperwork. Okay, so let's see here. So yeah, now if it goes back to September 30th, 2020, and it was printed on February 1st of 2022, 1 year, 4 months, 2 days. That is that does all go back to September 30th.
Yeah, that's where I was confused and trying to.
Yeah, so it all goes back to that one birthday of September 30th. It just, was the cat actually 6 months or was the cat a year and 4 months?
If it would have been alive, it was 1 year.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, I'm sorry. I see what you're saying there. Yeah, and that's just the. I think that's a.
That's just computer.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's still going to continue out time, even though
it's
we're not part of it.
It's just going to keep running, and the computer's going to add on.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've opened up charts and I'm like, wow, this animal's 47 years old.
Because computer clock is
exactly.
Running. Yeah.
You're like, that was the first patient I ever saw in practice.
It's like, man, that's. Doing pretty well on that one. With the other issues, like I said, I wonder if that would be more of an ARS 32-22-32 or 33-B3 with the minor records that doesn't affect anything.
Yeah.
I mean, because, I don't know if there's a full-on violation or just a minor records-keeping one. I think it'd be most appropriate, if anything.
The only way it might have been an issue is if the temperature was 105 and not taken.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
So.
And if there's like a malignant hyperthermia and we died during surgery.
Or this respiratory condition, this cat, now
true.
We've got a secondary bacterial or a roaring viral.
Yeah, because I mean, you're going to suppress the immune system with anesthesia.
The cat, right, because the cat did have some minor signs of respiratory disease and some major oral lesions probably associated with that infection.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that temperature is.
So the,
would have been pretty important.
At the time, are you talking at the time of drop-off?
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about, yeah.
Because, like, it's on the surgical report.
Right.
Like,
so
all the way through.
We started with surgery. When the animal was induced, then we had the temperature.
But the rule just says it has to be within 6 hours of surgery, right? So as long as you do it at the time you start, you're still within 6 hours.
Well, you have to do it.
You have to do it before you give any meds. But it doesn't say it has to be 6 hours before. It says it has to be within 6 hours.
Within 6 hours of the, I think that's interpreted as before, but I mean, when were like pre-meds given in relation to it? I guess that'd be kind of the question. Now, let's see, where is that at again?
The standard, though, isn't usually part of the exam, not part of the.
Yeah, not the pre-induction, because there's an exam that's required, and then there's the pre-induction stuff that's required. So
and usually they're separate,
can you, Well, I think you have to have them separate if they're listed separate in statute. You can do an exam and then immediately do a pre-induction one, but I don't think you can say one pre-induction covers the exam and the pre-induction statute.
What if you only touch that animal once, though? What if you do the exam,
well,
and then you give it...
And let's say you have like a really fractious
animal.
You
do a sedative, right?
Yeah, let's say
you have
a really...
And then you start it. Like, because a lot of these animals...
But if you had like a really fractious animal that you couldn't touch beforehand, I would expect you to write that down saying, I wasn't able to do an exam. Kind of like with me, I have some clients that either decline the temperature at the hospital or the staff's like, yeah, I don't want to get bit, I don't trust that dog. And I'm like, okay, just note in there that you thought about it and didn't do it. Because, and that's the biggest thing, is that you mention it, basically.
And this exam and the blanks were part of the exam, not the surgical record.
Yeah. So, yeah, so it's two separate, well, because the pre-anesthetic is not an actual exam, it's just
correct.
TPR, basically.
Correct.
So, yeah, so I look at it as two separate
minors
ones.
Because I sit here and I look at it and I go, I could totally see where you would not pre-examine the patient until you get it out to do the procedure. You then do your exam, you get your TPR, you give it your pre-med, then they start the anesthesia report, and the temp got put on the anesthesia report instead of in your exam.
But she did. She did examine the cat and make notations about the respiratory.
How do you know that that wasn't at 10:37 when they started?
For the objective part, that was done immediately prior to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I would still say it's a minor reference. I mean, I think that would be very viable in there.
So is that something we could address with a letter of concern? Or is that rise to a violation? Because
I think
we're
going
to call it minor.
Yeah, it's still a violation in that regard, so I think that would still be a fair statute to apply.
Okay.
But I mean, if there's some concern around it, and if you can justify it, then maybe a letter of concern to say you better clarify this better in the future.
Well, and it's okay. I'm not sure I'm reading this correctly, but the time says 10:24. Now it does say the final surgical reading, which it's not because they didn't finish surgery. That's like the initial, right? And then, and it has a TPR on there. And then it wasn't 10:31 that they actually gave the pre-med.
If you scroll up, no. 6 PA time.
There was a question of whether the cat had been fed or not, so there's a notation on there, due last.
Yeah. So yeah, it says PA time.
So the surgery was pushed back.
Okay, so if the when the exam was done, was that timestamp before 10:06?
That's what I'm trying to see. Where is the exam portion?
10:06 induction.
Yeah, 10:06 was TT Dex.
And they have a temp for that.
And yeah, that's. Because I have a visit. Okay, that was on the 27th, right?
Well, it looks like the medical notes were at 7:20 a.m.
That's what I was saying. There were four.
Right.
So it looks like it's 7:20. They didn't take a TPR, or at least didn't note it. Mainly because they thought it was going to be done at the time of induction.
Well, yeah, that's a. Letter of concern.
Letter of concern
option.
That.
There, I think there's enough questions in here because the 7:20 could be the intake from the technicians, and the doctor doesn't have to be
and
there
the doctor
for that.
Wasn't involved.
Yeah, and then finally the doctor's involved right before you do your exam and you poke him right there.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So I think maybe a letter of concern would be a better option.
Yeah. Which is
just clarify and make sure you're doing that.
Okay.
Yeah, but good catch.
I would make a motion then to dismiss with no violation. Issue a letter of concern about accuracy of the medical records in recording the TPR at the time of exam.
Second.
Second. It just kind of goes back to the whole thing I said before, is it doesn't matter if you're a spay-neuter clinic or whatever, or high volume or anything, you're still beholden to the same exact statute, so you better be doing that same exact stuff. And I think we're falling into this realm of, oh, well, we're spay-neuters.
Okay,
and I'm seeing that a lot. And I'm seeing it with a lot of other things, and technicians taking over and doing things. So, I mean, we're running into some weird areas in veterinary medicine, so it's good that people understand that you have to be hold to these statutes. So we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All right, so we can, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion passes to dismiss with a letter of concern.